Nice to see everybody. And especially those of you in the practice period. Glad to see you. I hope everybody has had a good day of sitting. You're all nice and peaceful, happy. I guess that in Zen, I should check the sound. How are we doing with sound? Can you hear me okay? Everybody, front, back? Louder, some people say louder. Right over there, there's a sinkhole of sound. But now you can hear okay, better? Good? China, can hear?
Yes, I can hear, a little blurry.
A little blurry. You have your hearing aids in?
I do.
Yeah, okay.
You really know how to embarrass me.
No? Almost everybody I know has hearing aids.
I'm up there,
okay.
I'm moving.
Okay, good, good. Bring your chair. So I don't know what you all think that you were doing today so far, but I'm telling you that in Zen, we have this mystical idea about meditation. We don't think that you've been meditating today at all. We don't think you've just been sitting there with your ordinary body, which has maybe had a certain amount of discomfort with your ordinary mind and all your various unimportant and uninspiring thoughts. We don't think that's what's been going on at all. We think that Zazen is Buddha mind. We think that Zazen is ultimate truth, or some words like that. We think that when you sit in Zazen, you are tapping into some kind of ultimate truth. You are sitting there becoming ultimate truth, even though we fully realize that probably mostly what you're experiencing is exactly uncomfortable body and unimportant thoughts. Nevertheless, we really think that that's what's going on when you're sitting there. And I use these words, Buddha mind, ultimate truth, or whatever I said, which, what do such words mean? Anyway, we could make up other words. But the fact remains that there is definitely something really, really powerful and really, really important about being a human being. And when we sit in Zazen, that side of what we are is what we manifest, even if a lot of what we experience is trivial, if you want to call it trivial. Did you hear all that?
Yes.
Good. So the sound system works. Good. We're all materialists. We live in a material world, and now, perhaps more than ever, wherever you go in the world, anywhere in the world, you're in the material world, and that's what we emphasize. But according to Buddhist thought, there is no material world. Or maybe to be more precise about it, there is no material world without the invisible or the non-material world. Actually, the material world and the immaterial, the non-material, the invisible world are identical. But we're living in modern times, postmodern times, and we are really, really excited about the material world because it is very exciting and there's so much that can be done with it, right? And we're pouring all our creativity and all our energy into this fabulous material world and all of its details. We're studying it on a macro and a micro level. We're mastering it. We're understanding the body. We're understanding the brain. We're buying and selling everything all over the place. And we're getting better and better every day at being who we are. Because we have the psychologists and the doctors and everybody who helps us figure out, and the books that we can read. So much are we doing all of this that we really don't have a lot of time to remember the invisible. We don't have a lot of time to remember death and disappearing and the ineffable, which is always here also. Because without these things, nothing could be here. It's as if there's a little circle of light surrounded by endless darkness, and we are so excited by all the things that we can see in that little circle of light that we don't even notice that we're surrounded by the dark. So when we sit in Zazen, we're allowing space for the darkness. Maybe even once in a while we notice it in a flash or in something around the corner that we barely notice. Around the edges of what we're used to paying attention to, maybe sometimes we notice what we're not used to paying attention to. Which, I hope, is a great relief. I hope today that you've all had some moments of relief. Because the material world alone, just by itself, as if the material world ever could be alone, is really relentless. It's exhausting, it's confining, it's troubling. One's own life is all of that. Just by yourself. And then there's all those other people that you have to live with and all their complications. Everybody trying to get what they want and need all in the same space, which usually is difficult, doesn't work out that well, and sometimes ensues great tragedy and upset. So yes, as exciting as it all is, the material world, the social world, the political world is really difficult. What we call life is difficult. And that's exactly where the Buddha's teaching begins, with suffering. I'm always thinking about suffering. What a deep and a profound thing suffering is. I looked it up in the sutra. This is the first statement of Buddha's first truth. Now this, bhikkhus, is the noble truth of suffering. Birth is suffering, aging is suffering, illness is suffering, death is suffering, union with what is displeasing is suffering, separation from what is pleasing is suffering, not to get what one wants is suffering. In brief, the five aggregates subject to clinging are suffering. This first noble truth of Buddha is the Buddha's foremost and most profound teaching. With these words, the Buddha is saying, astonishingly, but don't you know it's true, that all conditioned life, the only life we can know, is suffering. That even if everything goes great in your life, even if somehow we are successful and fulfilled in every way, all our dreams come true, which as we know is a highly unlikely occurrence, and yet theoretically possible, right? Even if all that worked out, there would be suffering. And the fact that it's theoretically possible is what makes us so miserable. Right? Because we're thinking, so what went wrong? Where did I go wrong here? What's wrong with me? Or what's wrong with this world? Because happiness is theoretically possible. But I'm not happy. Things are not going that well. Or they're going fine. But it's not enough. So what's wrong with this picture? Well, this is the Buddha saying, there's nothing wrong with you at all. And there's nothing at all wrong with the world. It's life itself, existence itself, that is the problem. What a relief, right? It's not my fault. I don't have to do anything different. That's great. But that's terrible, right? It's terrible. I thought it was bad. So much worse than I could have ever imagined. It's a problem to be born. It's a tremendous trauma to be born. And then, if you are born, it's a big problem to have a body that by its nature can be injured and become ill. And that body has to die, and that's a problem. And if you're lucky to live a really long time, you're going to get old, and being old is a multifaceted problem. And if you're going to be alive in a world with others, you're going to have fights with all of them, and a lot of them you're not going to have fights with, you're going to love them a lot, and you're going to lose them. And you're not going to get what you want. And you're definitely going to have to endure a lot of stuff you don't want. And at the very end, Buddha says, built into the very mechanism that makes it possible for you to live in this world, your perception, your thought, your organism, built into it, is a painful lack and a painful longing. So we always are looking for something that we're not getting. That is certainly a sobering point of view. But then the Buddha says, wait, that's only the first truth. There's three more. And the other three truths are telling us that, lo and behold, there is a way to overcome this intractable problem. Yes, it really is true. All conditioned existence is suffering, and we better understand that. But there is an end to suffering. It is possible to live in the conditioned world in an unconditioned way. So the end of suffering is to enter the unconditioned. What's the unconditioned? What is not subject to birth, aging, sickness, grasping, and unhappiness? What does not and cannot grasp? What is beyond experience? And that's what we call the unconditioned. We call it nirvana, we call it Buddha, we call it Tathagata, we call it thusness, awakening, enlightenment, lots of names. And according to Mahayana Buddhism and Zen, the unconditioned is not another world, another place, or another state. The unconditioned is identical to the conditioned existence. It's not something else. And yet the unconditioned cannot be identified and known and experienced, because everything that can be known and identified and experienced is conditioned. And here's the really astonishing part. Despite this, we can live in the unconditioned. We can feel the unconditioned somehow in all the invisible places of our living. And inspired by it, we can shape our understanding and our conduct and our way of being in the world with others. It's astonishing. A metaphor that the Buddha frequently used to talk about this mystery is waves and ocean. The ocean is just water, a whole lot of water. And waves are also just water. When wind and gravity and currents operate on the ocean water, there can be waves, sometimes really big waves that cause a lot of damage, that sink ships and smash coastal buildings. And there can be small waves that are sparkling in the sunlight and really pretty to bob up and down on in the ocean beach. A wave is a particular thing. Not a thing, really. It's an event, isn't it? It's an event that gathers energy, rises up, breaks, dissipates, falls back into the ocean from which it arose and is gone. And every wave has a destiny and a lifespan. But really, every wave is nothing other than a temporary event of the ocean. Every wave has never been anything other than the water from which it rose up according to conditions and to which it returns. So life is just like that. Things, people, everything really is just an event. There are no things. Come and go in their particularity. They can be magnificent. They can be tragic. But they're always temporary. But the ocean is not temporary, at least in this metaphor. The ocean is not temporary. And there's no ocean other than the waves and the currents and all the different water events. The ocean is nothing more or less than the different waves and currents that do what they do according to the conditions that govern them. So that's why sometimes we say, well, the ocean is waves, but also not waves. And the waves are the ocean, but also not the ocean. And everything is fleeting, coming and going all the time, but also not. Because the ocean doesn't come or go. But ocean is just a word. There's no ocean outside of the activity that we call the ocean. That's a pretty good metaphor, don't you think? And you could easily understand it. But to really and truly understand it, we have to understand it not only with our mind, but also with our perception, with our emotion, with our feeling, with our whole body, and our whole felt sense of being a person alive in the world. Thinking about it is good, but not nearly enough. We have to be able to live it all the time. So that brings me to Suzuki Roshi's Becoming Yourself. This is from page 19, from a small chapter called Just to Sit as Yourself. It's the beginning of that chapter. He says, I would like to explain shikantaza, which means just to sit. A monk said to a Zen master, it is very hot. Is it possible to sit somewhere where there is no heat or cold? And the master said, when it is hot, you should be hot Buddha. When it is cold, you should be cold Buddha. This is Dogen Zenji's understanding of the story. The usual story, in that story, the usual way of telling it, the master says, when it is hot, you should be killed by the heat. When it is cold, you should be killed by the cold. But if, Suzuki Roshi goes on, if you say killed, the killed is extra. If you say attain enlightenment, the attainment is extra. Dogen Zenji was very direct when he said, when it is hot, you should be hot Buddha. When it is cold, you should be cold Buddha. That is the meaning of shikantaza, just to sit. So that's what Suzuki Roshi says. Pretty simple, right? He's not talking about complicated ideas and big philosophical terms. But what in the world is he actually talking about? It's not that clear, is it? So the monk's question about hot and cold is about suffering, right? Life is always a problem. It's always something. I mean, if it's nice and warm, before you know it, it's going to be way too hot. And if it's cool, you'll be freezing. It's like a rule of the universe, right? Things always go too far, right? Everything eventually becomes a problem. How do I escape this problem? And the usual answer in this story that I'm sure all of you have heard before, the usual answer is, just as Suzuki Roshi says, Let the heat kill you, let the cold kill you. And this means something like, if you try to escape, if you complain and wait for things to go according to your liking, that's how you suffer. Because there's no escape, and things go the way they go. The waves always follow the ocean's rules, not your rules. So letting the heat kill you or the cold kill you doesn't exactly mean resign yourself, because resigning yourself is just a sort of lower grade form of suffering. Let the heat kill you and let the cold kill you means plunge so completely into the conditions that you may or may not like that you totally disappear. When the you who is suffering from the heat is gone, there is no one there to suffer. There's just heat. When the you suffering from the cold is gone, there's no more suffering, just cold. Heat and cold are not the problem. You are the problem. You and your wanting. Sickness and death are not a problem. You and your wanting is the problem. So when it's time to be sick, be sick. Be completely sick, with nothing left over that is not sick. When it's time to die, just completely die, with nothing at all left over. That's what we are training in on our little black cushions. That's what we're learning how to do, whether we realize it or not. How to become so still that we aren't even here anymore. The only thing here is just this moment. And then we're free. But notice that Suzuki Roshi has a little problem with this usual way of understanding the story. Did you notice that? And he says, Dogen also has a little problem with it. He says, kill is extra, meaning it becomes its own kind of problem, right? Attain is extra. It becomes its own kind of problem. Instead of letting the heat or the cold kill you, he says, striving for that to occur, when it is hot, be a hot Buddha. When it is cold, be a cold Buddha. There's no killing involved. There's no attainment involved. And he's telling us this difference is what makes Shikantaza just sitting, Shikantaza. Just to sit, nothing more. No killing, no attaining, no disappearing, no improving, no doing anything, just sitting. Just the way we've been doing all day. When it's cold, be a cold Buddha. When it's hot, be a hot Buddha. When it's zazen, be a zazen Buddha. When your mind is all jumbled up, be a jumbled up minded Buddha. When you're agitated, be an agitated Buddha. And when you go up to get up, to go to the bathroom, be a walking to the bathroom Buddha, and then be a peeing Buddha. Be the conditioned person that you are, but at the same time, be the unconditioned person that you are. Be a pathetic, silly human being. Because you are. There are no exceptions to the pathetic, silly rule. No matter how what great pretensions some among us may have, We're all in the same boat here. So be that. Don't pretend to be otherwise. And be an awesome Buddha. Because all of us are, without exception, awesome Buddhas, no matter how high or low an opinion we have of ourselves. So the question is, what would your life be like if you actually knew this? If you knew this in your bones? If you knew that you were a sad, sorry human being who was born due to currents and winds completely beyond your control, who lives for a very short amount of time, cresting, breaking, and washing back into the ocean, and that at the same time you are that awesome ocean. You are that life-giving mystery. What if, without necessarily thinking about it, you just knew it? Every minute of every day. And you knew that it wasn't just you, that everyone you looked at was that too. What if you knew that? How would you feel? How would you look at other people? How would you see them? How would you talk to them? How would you understand the world we live in? How would you talk to yourself? How would you react when something you didn't like happened? How would you appreciate the earth, the sky, the plants, and the animals? I'll quote a few more passages, paragraphs from Suzuki Roshi. When your practice is not good, then you're not good, Buddha. When your practice is good, you're a good Buddha. Poor and not good are themselves Buddha. Poor is Buddha. Not good is Buddha. Good is Buddha. And you're Buddha also. Whatever you think or say, every word becomes Buddha. I am Buddha. I is Buddha. And am is Buddha. And Buddha is Buddha. He's starting to sound a little bit like Dogen. I bet he read Dogen a little bit. Then he says, Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. When whatever you say is Buddha, there are no problems. Buddha, 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 Buddha. There's no need to translate it into English. No need to be bothered with fancy explanations of Buddhism. If you say Buddha, 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 that's it. Everything is Buddha. Sitting is Buddha. Lying down is Buddha. Every word is Buddha. This is our way. This is Shikantaza. When you practice Zazen with this understanding, that's real Zazen. When I hear a passage like that, it reminds me once again, in case I forgot, that I have no idea what's going on. I bet I'm not the only one here in the room who listens to lots of different podcasts and reads lots of stuff written by lots of smart people, all of whom are trying to explain what is going on. Right? And we're reading all this stuff and listening to it because we want to understand. I want to understand. That's why I'm listening to all these things. Then there's everyday life. And we're all talking about one another, about our relatives and our friends, or maybe about ourselves. Trying to understand, what makes me tick? What makes her tick? Why is she this way? Why is she that? What's wrong with this relationship? How do we fix it? Why is it so hard? Why can't I even understand myself? Why am I like this? What's wrong with me? Let's figure this out. And now there are so many people out there really smart people. They do research. They're so intelligent. They know the literature. They have really good advice. You even have machines that can give you good advice now. Great advice. But nobody has any idea, really, what is going on. Because what is going on has a mind of its own. A deep, deep current running underneath everything that nobody understands and no one ever could understand. Why do we want to understand things? So we can control things, so we have some measure of control over this out-of-control thing, these out-of-control other people, this really out-of-control, crazy world. But it doesn't work. Because everything is Buddha, 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 Buddha. And if we're willing to let go, willing to live and die, and of course it goes without saying, to make our best effort to do what we can, then we can be perfectly okay no matter what. And that's what Suzuki Roshi means by true Zazen. We can live with calm confidence in life, in love, and in the fundamental goodness of reality. He goes on to say this. We say just to sit, but to understand this is rather difficult. That may be why Dogen Zenji left us so many teachings. This does not mean that his teachings are difficult. When you sit, you know what he means without thinking or expecting anything. When you accept yourself as Buddha, or understand everything as unfolding, the absolute truth, the first principle, or the great being, then whatever you see or think is the actual teaching of Buddha. And whatever you do is the actual practice of Buddha. Problems arise because you are trying to do something. Or because you think that it doesn't matter whether or not you do something. That's Suzuki Roshi, you know? He's so great. So everything is unfolding as it should. Doesn't look like it to me, but what can I say? I have to have patience, and I have to have faith. And in these last two sentences, which I think are so brilliant, Suzuki Roshi mentions the two extremes that we get caught in. We're either trying to do something or thinking that it doesn't matter whether or not we do something. Well, here's the thing. Life is doing something. That's the definition of life, doing something. There's no life without doing something. But life doesn't try to do something. You know, the clouds are not trying to get from here to there. They're not trying to do that. The trying part is extra. That's where the fear and the desire and all of the suffering come in. We can just do something the best way we know how because we're always doing something. We have to do something. And you know what? It really matters what we do. It's really, really, really important what we do. We have to do good and refrain from doing bad stuff. That's pretty clear. And it's really important. The whole world is depending on our doing the good stuff and refraining from doing the bad stuff. But we don't try to do that. We just do it the best we can. And that's a good way to live. And then when what we call suffering comes, we practice being a suffering Buddha. That's okay. Other people suffer. Why shouldn't we? Okay, I'm done. Just a poem. Just a little poem, and then I'll stop. This poem is called A Feeling. I have a feeling I can't hide, so hidden in me. The sun now shines on it in me, and in me, it can't be named, though I can hear it in me, in yellow colors, not one, but several yellows. Everyone hopes to feel this feeling that everyone feels without feeling. In a wonderful day that weighs so little, a bright sun after such long rain, coming, not yet. The moon at night is shy, hides behind a cloud, and now the rose, speaking Yiddish in my grandmother's tone, composes itself in red. Everything clear becomes murky, and everything beautiful is ash in the mouth, the eyes deep red with tears for the foolish world. One can't go on, which is why one goes on. Petals within petals. In a garden in the cool of the day, when light is slant, it's a conception of great renown, a feeling one already knows without being there. All the animals that are now hidden inside other animals have names that have been assigned to them in the cool of the garden. There is no plot to this tale. So thank you for listening to all that. Now let's talk. The whole poem?
Yeah.
Well, who doesn't love it when someone says, would you read that poem again? Of course, I'll read it again. It's actually, sometimes I write poems that are like a little, several different poems. This is like three little short poems, one after the other, all that have to do with each other. So I'll read it again. A Feeling. I have a feeling I can't hide, so hidden in me. The sun now shines on it in me, and in me it can't be named. Though I can hear it in me in yellow colors, not one but several yellows. Everyone hopes to feel this feeling that everyone feels without feeling. That's the first poem. In a wonderful day that weighs so little, a bright sun after such long rain, the moon at night is shy, hides behind a cloud, and now the rose, speaking Yiddish in my grandmother's tone, composes itself in red. Everything clear becomes murky, and everything beautiful is ash in the mouth, the eyes deep red with tears for the foolish world. One can't go on, which is why one goes on. Petals within petals. That's the second poem. In a garden in the cool of the day, when light is slant, it's a conception of great renown, a feeling one already knows without being there. All the animals that are now hidden inside other animals have names that have been assigned them in the cool of the garden. There is no plot to this tale. So let's talk about the unconditioned, which, what can you say about it? Well, let's see what we can say about it. So let's get in our groups and talk about what, so I gave a little Dharma talk about the unconditioned or something about the unconditioned. So what's your take? What's your understanding of the unconditioned? And do you have some reference point for it in your life? Do you think, you know what, that made me think of this, that made me think of that. I have had these kinds of experiences that maybe are like that or not. Anyway, let's just see if we have anything to say about this or whatever else you want to talk about. So I think we all know how to do this. We're going to get in groups of three. We'll ring a bell at the end of 3 minutes. So each person's going to have 3 minutes of their own time to speak. Try to speak without rehearsing anything or just surprise yourself with what comes up. The other two people are going to listen and not ask you questions or anything like that. Just listen to you for 3 minutes, and then it'll be their turn and their turn. 3, 3, 3, and then a few minutes at the end for debriefing. And the people online are going to do the same. Okay?
Yep.
So just find your own partners. And I always say, try to be with a couple people that you don't know.